aided into the second paragraph under collections, the last line in section C.1, that's on the third last line of the second paragraph under collections. And when that matter comes up on the consent calendar, would ask that you would approve this item without those extra three words, and then we'll strike it in the formal policy that's adopted and is then posted on the DC website with all other policies. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other modifications to the agenda?
No further modifications. Thank you, Chair.
Seeing none. We'll move on to item 4, public comment on agenda items. Are there any public comments? Seeing none, we will move on to item 5, board member and executive director comments. I have none, none from the board. Our executive director,
David Friedman, on program manager on behalf of executive director Tom Kirk. Tom isn't able to join us today, but asked that I relay his thanks to our finance team, finance director Claude Kilgore, accounting manager Janet Reitman, Don Dame, our independent finance expert on the Zoom line, for all the wonderful work that they've done, along with Kevin Brody, our IT and graphics person, on the budget this year. As your new board members, you may not know, but this is the first year that DCE has a formal budget book, following the practice at CVAG as well as CVCC. And once again, thank you to the team who put that together. And also, Chair, I wanted to follow up on a remark that you made actually at the City Council meeting on June 5th. As you may recall, came up in the transportation, CVAG Transportation Committee meeting that day, and also in the executive committee agenda. There is a project currently being investigated by CVAG together with Palm Springs and City of Desert Hot Springs to potentially put a bridge up on Indian Canyon for dealing with some of the below sand issues and to facilitate transportation. Want to let you know that in addition to all the work that CVAG is doing, Desert Community Energy is also involved, working closely with our CVAG colleagues on that project. And we are looking at a high level at potentially some solar shade structures that could potentially be part of the grant application to the California Transportation Commission. Once again, these are preliminary analysis. If there is anything formal, that would, of course, come to the board for formal approval, potentially later the last year. And then finally, just wanted to remind you, our July meeting has been canceled. The next regularly scheduled meeting is here in a large conference room for Monday, August 21st at 3 p.m. We are looking to determine if we've got appropriate agenda items, including potentially some of the procurement matters that are mentioned there. And we'll keep both of our board members posted on whether that meeting is maintained. And thank you. That concludes our remarks on behalf of the executive director.
All right. Thank you. Monday, August 21 at 3 p.m.
Yes.
If we could look at an alternative, I need to be in Anaheim for a CalPERS Women's Conference by 4 o'clock that afternoon.
Okay. Well, thank you, Chair. If that meeting is maintained, we'll look at potential other dates.
All right. Thank you. So no other board or executive director comments, and thank you for those comments. Move on to item 6, and why don't we pull item 6E so that we can get the language absolutely correct. And I'd ask for a motion on item 6A through D, F, and G.
I do have a question on... Goodness. I believe it's 6.
Sorry.
My apologies. 6B, but then I would move to approve the remaining items.
All right, so we will have a motion. We've got a motion to approve 6A, B, and C, F, and G, D, and E. We will have further discussion. That's seconded. All in favor, aye. Any opposed? Motion carried. So we will start with your question on item 6D.
So actually it's on 6B. And on that one, I realize this is probably just normal course of business because this is new to me. It asks us to attest to the veracity of the data. And what I didn't have here is just how did we get to the data? And there was no backup attached to the report. So I was just curious if staff could fill me in on that part.
And this is on item
6B on the report.
B is in boy.
I'm sorry. The power source disclosures. Yes. So we work very closely with our consultants at the Energy Authority. They accumulate all the data. They do all of the procurement, and they are able to calculate the actual GHG emissions. The Energy Commission has a template that they provide, and that indicates for each of the potential sources what exactly is the GHG emission. And we're largely focused on our carbon-free emissions, and those are a combination of small hydro, the wind projects that we have. 2022, we only have one. Now we have three within the city limits of Palm Springs, and the rest of our carbon-free are large hydro facilities, largely in the Pacific Northwest. So it's with the data is provided, combination of California Energy Commission and our consultants at the Energy Authority, who provided us with the templates.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. So
I would move approval of that item as well.
I'll second it. All in favor say aye. Aye. No opposed. Item 6B is approved. 6E, David, would you identify again the three words that are being removed?
Thank you, Chair. So this is on the policy number 2302, delinquent account collection and bad debt policy. And this is on the second paragraph under collections. There are three words on the last line in section C.1 that should be deleted in the policy. There are actually no sections. So I can just read that full sentence if you would like. Customers enrolled in the California alternative rate for energy care, family electric rate assistance, FERA, or medical baseline programs at the time SEE returns a receivable to DCE are not subject to the collections criteria if the balance is $500 or less. Once again, striking the words in section C.1 from that paragraph, as there are no sections in the policy.
All right, move approval as revised.
Second that, yes.
All right, all in favor, aye. No opposed. 6E is approved. We will now move on to discussion action items. First one is 7A, DCE, fiscal year 2023-24 budget. And we have Mr. Kilgore.
Thank you, Chair Middleton, Vice Chair Travis. Nice to be with you again today. You can hear me back there. And we covered a lot of this when I was here in May, so I won't rehash too much of it, but maybe a little context for those that weren't here in the audience. So let's run through that quickly. And, before I jump into the key budget factors, just want to remind everyone, there's a whole team of people, subject matter experts at the Energy Authority and elsewhere that monitor all this for us. So it's not just DC staff, it's a whole slew of people working for us. And what we're monitoring throughout the year is hydrology, especially on the West Coast, right? That affects our power supply here, as well as weather across the country. And the reason we're doing that is because this, water shortages in the Pacific Northwest and heat waves in the desert and elsewhere across the country affect power cost and DC operations heavily and sometimes extremely at certain times of the year. So just jumping into that, the other two key factors that we're actually going to hear about in the presentation following mine, but the two big key factors that we have to consider and monitor are DC load variability, and that's what we're delivering to customers, the load variability, and then price volatility. So I think the Energy Authority is going to be here to give us more discussion on that, but that significantly plays into DC operations and factors. Other factors, of course, geopolitical ones, nationally as well as internationally, right? We have a war in Ukraine, sanctions, that's definitely affected liquefied natural gas and who's stocking what where and supply and demand. So those are key factors we have to monitor. as well as, you know, working with the regulator, the California Public Utilities Commission. They have pretty stringent regulations and requirements with things like resource adequacy and the renewable portfolio standards. So, you know, that's a lot of work that David and his team are constantly monitoring. And it does play into the budget quite significantly, especially with the resource adequacy requirements. And then we have Southern California Edison. Couple of big pieces there. One, the rate stabilization schedule that the DC board has approved, and you know, tire rates to theirs in a way, and also the power cost and difference adjustment that plays into DCE's financials as well, because it's basically an exit fee that SoCal Edison has placed on DCE customers that have moved on from SCE, and that plays in DCE's revenue figures. And, you know, those were all a lot of external factors, things are hard to, you know, control. One thing that DCE can start to control and has, as David mentioned in the director's remarks, is these power purchase agreements. You mentioned, David, we now have three power purchase agreements within the city limits, is it? Or yes, within the city limits. So, you know, this is something we can control because these are long-term agreements, right? And we have a long-term business operations, a long-term strategy. We want to match that with long-term procurement, so we're not always in the CAISO market hedging, you know, and buying in that kind of field. So this is really a key for the future. I know we're looking at more constantly. So those are big budget factors, assumptions. Accrual basis. We do talk about big dollars, I think, in electricity business, and those dollars are on accrual basis. So there can be a lag up to 2-3 months sometimes when the cash comes in from when we're calling it revenue. All righty. So that's an important thing. Palm Springs, of course, we're assuming is the only active CCA. I think Palm Desert missed the boat on that one this year, although I know I'm always hopeful to get more customers in the program in the future years. And so that's our assumption, Palm Springs being the only active CCA. And we see some of those windmills, and I can imagine one of them's the power purchase agreement they have lined up there. So that's one of our assumptions. Of course, CBAG, here I am a staff of CBAG, as are actually the other staff here, and CBAG's staffing DCE. They have an agreement in place, and that's soon to continue. And the Energy Authority, right? They're a big credit provider now. They also provide us with all the inputs. The financial model we're using in the budget was from the June 7th financial model. We actually met with the risk management team on the 15th, who concurred that the June 7th model was substantially material to that date. And even this morning, I confirmed that no material changes from this financial model. So we're using just about the best information we can in a timely manner. And key also assumption is that they're going to provide DCE credit support. This is a big thing that DCE is working towards, is getting their own investment grade credit rating. It's difficult for anyone buying a house to, you know, qualify for a loan for that, let alone DCE, a new energy company, to go out there in the market and enter into those agreements on their own. So we're actively working towards that with T. And then, of course, we have the DCE board. We're assuming, and we know that all board policies and objectives are going to be met. We're going to be keeping the board updated with changes throughout the year, and that we want to keep everyone informed as things change. So those are our assumptions. Most of the input we went over last time. So let's look into a little bit of the numbers here. We'll go pretty high level. The budget book is with the staff reports in more detail, and after this, we can take some questions. But at a high level, the first column of numbers is what is this year's budget, right? This year ends on June 30th. The second column is where we're estimating the year end on June 30th on Friday to be. And then there's a little difference with some percentages I'll go over. And then we have next year's budgeted column on the fourth column with numbers. And you can see that's $71 million for budget of revenue. So let's see, where are we starting out next year with it? Well, where do we end this year with this? Kind of how that works in accounting. And, you know, right now, I think using T's model from last year, we're down about 5% in the revenue expectations from when we set the budget last year, which I think all in all with the things that happened throughout the years, really impressive that we can get that information on a budget so large. But it's down 5%, right? Costs are ending the year slightly up. So that's about 1% up. And what I want to show you there is that means that our target for the net revenue, that reserves we're building, are only about 78% of what we budgeted, which is still significant at about $13.5 million estimated at the end of this week. But it's not where we thought we'd be, right? So how does that play into next year? Well, next year we see that revenues are up about 16%. Now, remember, we have the 5% deficit for this year. So, it looks really good. And so you think, okay, well, we're down 5% this year. You kind of take that out of 16. It's not quite 16, right? And then the costs also next year are up 6%. So we do have an increase revenue next year and net margin, which is great, but it's not quite, it's up 16%, just to point that out. And well, that's going to allow for next year, we're budgeting $20 million in reserves. And, that sounds like a large number, but, we were budgeting to be there already by now. And that's really what's going to get us that much needed investment grade quality credit rating that DCE is looking for. So, I think the main point I want to make there, and I'm going to look at my notes to make sure I make it, is that next year, fiscal year 24, to me, it looks like a vital catch-up year. And, to me, that also makes it imperative to maintain, the currently established board, the board's rate stabilization schedule. So we can get to our target reserves, which we're going to talk about briefly. And before we do, I just want to show you a little pie by the slice, or by the slice I call it, so you can see a little visual here. We're estimating, again, that $71.5 million in retail sales revenue next fiscal year. And this blue piece of the pie is the cost of the physical power supply. And the main point here is that's a big cost, $48 million. And we have a couple other costs, like some of the Calpine back office stuff and some SCE charges and our T and our credit support. And other smaller costs or DC internal costs, such as CVAC staffing and other items. So of those total expenses you see there, about 94% of that is made up by the wholesale power supply costs. And that was really the main point I wanted to make on the expense side. And if anyone can guess what the next piece of the pie is, it says it up there on the far right in little yellow. A residual margin. So that's where that $20 million is coming into play. So you can see that visually there for you. And so let's just talk about what that margin is and what that looks like. So let's look at the financial reserves projection. So last year I dubbed this DCE's Great Green Mountain of Hope. And the reason is, and at that point, only 1 year ago, DC wasn't on this mountain yet. And if anyone can tell what this is, it's cumulative reserves. So at the beginning of this chart, it was like we were standing on the valley floor looking up at Mount San Jacinto. And this year, you can see the first column on the left with the July 2022 through June 2023, we're on the foothills of that green mountain of hope, of that reserves that DCE so badly needs. And what's happening next fiscal year, 23, 24? Well, we're making it to base camp. You see that little hump? It looks like about midway through the fiscal year, we're gonna be at base camp and we're gonna be hitting our target level of reserves for the first time in DCE's history, which is something I think to be very proud of for this organization, everyone that's been a part of it since its inception and even more recently. I just want to point out, it's a pretty steep climb. It has been, and it does start to flatten out a little bit, not so steep. Things start to level off. There's uncertainty out in future years. And I think that's just imperative to point out, to maintain those levels and get to that point. DCE really needs to maintain the board approved rate stabilization schedule throughout the next fiscal year. And that is really the extent of what I wanted to share with you outside of what you have in your budget book. At this time, I'd like to help answer any questions that anyone may have, and we might call on our online support experts to chime in as well.
All right.
Thank you. So when we're talking about the reserve, and when I'm looking at the other revenue slot on 23-24, it's showing 258,000. Are we taking any interest earnings into account?
We have taken all interest earnings into account, and that was actually the first time we were able to do that was this year because we had some cash in the bank. So we did actually work with the Energy Authority to project any interest we'd be receiving on our accounts. DCE invests with River City Bank currently. And at a future board meeting, I'd love to present maybe some options for different products. Anyway, we do have an ICS account that they sweep overnight funds into under government code. So that's currently what we're looking to get our interest from. And maybe we can do CDs or something in the future like other CCAs do.
Okay. And I was just curious, we do keep that pretty liquid, I'm sure, I'm guessing, because most of the reserve policies seem to be for operations.
It is. So that's for working capital needs, and everything is liquid that we could pay out, I would think, tomorrow, except for some deposits we hold for these power purchase agreements for performance and delivery there. So yeah, it's very liquid.
Okay. I'm just thinking future-wise, if we exceeded our reserve policy, we could do a little more long-term and get better earnings. And
absolutely. That's a great point, and why I was so excited that we're making it there this year, and it seems like those questions should, you know, be able to evolve throughout the year, the budget year.
I think from the helicopter view, that was what I was questioning, so thank you.
Well, I'm glad you did.
So we had an opportunity at the last meeting to dig into this a little bit more deeply. So I don't have any questions today. I'm as well very pleased to see where we're at from a reserve standpoint. Obviously, the market has been very volatile the last few years, given the amount of rain that we received over the course of this year. Let's hope that we're in for a little bit smoother ride.
Absolutely.
But as we all know, it's best to be prepared.
That's what we presented to you. So thank you.
Thank you. That entertain a motion to approve the budget for 23-24, item 7A. And I will second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Budget is approved.
Mm-hmm.
Yay. So thank you. We'll move on to 7B, presentation of historical and forecasted energy prices in a volatile market. Jacqueline.
Hello, everyone. Hope I'm coming through all right on Zoom. All right, I'll go ahead and get into the presentation. This one is primarily informational in nature. It's providing the board with some context that was requested at my previous presentation regarding how energy prices have historically been, you know, the volatility associated with that. So you can actually see some data rather than just hearing me talk about it, as well as talking through heat wave events that have happened historically in California. Those impacts to DCE, and then the expectations around summer 2023 heat waves. And so I will go ahead and move on. So the first section is covering what we see in energy market price volatility, both forward looking and some historical as well, and then we'll dive into the heat waves. So I'll be presenting in the following few slides charts that show the California energy prices. Overall, the big takeaway is that they've been increasing since DCE's launch. And I think that's particularly relevant because, you know, we typically talk about things that have just happened the past 6 months, the past year, but they really have gone up tremendously since DCE first launched in 2020. So I think a little bit more of a historical background gives additional context of where we are today in California's energy markets. volatility within energy prices cannot be fully predicted, just like volatility in the stock market or other sorts of highly commoditized markets. And this is why DCE procures energy hedges in advance to lock in prices today so that you aren't exposed to that volatility and the risk associated with it in the future. In general, you know, prices don't go down. They tend to just dramatically spike up. So the goal of procuring energy ahead of time, procuring energy that will be delivered next August, for example, or in September, is in order to lock in prices and ensure that DCE stays to the budget that Cloud detailed previously. As a side note, this isn't the main thrust of this presentation, but I just wanted to note, while energy prices, which we procure in order to serve DCE's load, have increased, and that's the focus of this presentation, other energy market products that DCE procures have also been increasing tremendously. In particular, in-state renewable energy is up 250% over the past year. Carbon-free energy, which DCE is interested in to meet your carbon-free targets for your carbon-free product, is up 50% over the past year. And resource adequacy, which all load-serving entities are required to buy in order to ensure that you're meeting, helping the grid be reliable, is up 120% year over year, which are tremendously high increases in all three products over the past year and really buck any historical trends we've seen historically. I think the reason for that, there's a lot of them. The very kind of simplistic rationale is that carbon-free energy is up because there is more demand within all of the Western United States for that carbon-free energy. And while California had a great water year, the Pacific Northwest had a below average water year. In-state renewable energy prices are up because there are a large number of resources that have been delayed coming online in California. And so everyone is hunting for that renewable energy to meet their needs because projects have been delayed. And then RE capacity is up because California is essentially in a capacity squeeze as we, again, try to bring more resources onto the grid. And so all of those supply constraints are causing prices to increase as demand has not decreased. Jumping into energy prices, this first chart walks through peak power prices. As a reminder, the peak hours of the day are Monday through Saturday, early morning to early evening, essentially. The next chart will show off-peak hours, which are middle of the night, as well as Sunday and federal holidays. So I'll just walk through each one of these charts. The line that you see in front of you right now is what the forecasted forward power prices were when DCE launched in April 2020. So you can see a peak in the summer, a smaller peak in the winter when we have high heating, and then a dip down into the spring months when we have water runoff and high solar hours. And this has historically been the way power prices have looked in California for the past, I would say, almost 10 to 15 years. However, as we all know, in 2020, we had COVID, which wasn't helpful to the energy industry or any other industry. And we also had a summer heat wave event, and that really shook the market and fundamentally changed how forward price curves were being forecasted as the risk of future heat wave events and those high price spikes got baked into the forward predictions of power prices. So when we go on to 2021, again, this is just forward looking. So it starts in April 2021 and looks forward in time. You can see a much higher spike in the prices for that summer month. And that's due to the concern that another heat wave event would happen similar to what happened in summer of 2020. And then again, even though summer of 2021 was a relatively quiet summer, there's still a lot of concern in the market, some fear, some concern around how summer prices could spike up. And so you see just another step up in the forward price curves. And then this brings us to the latest curve that I'm showing you, which is April of this year. And the big takeaway here that I would mention is the spike that you see in not just the summer months, but also in the winter months. And that driver is due to a very unexpected and very large price spike that we saw this past winter. And so if I go on to look at the historical price curve, you can see that curve occurring in December, January of 2023. That was due to a lack of gas in California and due to a lack of gas to provide heating as well as gas to fuel natural gas power plants. Prices spiked pretty tremendously in the energy markets since natural gas is baseload power in California. And that fear is now shown in the forward market curves going forward, that not only do we have this sort of summer peak to be concerned about, but also a winter peak. And you can also just, I'll also note that you can see summer of 2020, that price spike, and some also activity in the winter as well. And the other thing I would just draw the board's attention to is that while the forward price curves, you know, they predict summer heat events reasonably well, especially after we got our first taste of it in 2020, the volatility that we saw in the energy market in this past winter was very unexpected in terms of like what the forward price curves are showing. No one was expecting prices to jump that high. And that's another reason, you know, why we are very regimented when it comes to energy hedging in order to ensure that we, DCE is well protected against these sort of energy price spikes. Jumping forward, I'll go through this graph a little bit quicker. It's the same sort of story, just off-peak power prices. And the main thing here to note is that off-peak power prices are generally not as high as peak. You know, the middle of the night, demand is low, prices tend to be lower as well. However, when we pull in the historical, you can see that there was still a very large price spike that we saw in winter of 2022 into January of 2023 that impacted not just the peak prices, but also off peak. It was around the clock, as we say in the industry. And that concern is baked into the future forward curves where you have a winter peak higher than a summer peak, which is relatively unusual for off peak power. I'll pause there for any questions from the board.
No questions.
No questions.
All right. I have a couple more slides, but I think the slide chart jumped away from what I could view. Thank you. Okay. All right, moving on to historical summer heat wave impacts. So first, kind of a summary of what we're going to cover here. We're showing 3 years of DCE's performance history over the summer period. In 2020, there were two major price spikes associated with heat waves. One occurred in mid to late August. That was when we had rolling blackouts on the grid. And then there was another smaller price spike that occurred over the Labor Day weekend in September. 2021 was relatively quiet. There were no significant heat wave events, which is actually helpful when you look at the data because it gives kind of a grounding of a regular summer to compare against 2020 and 2022. And then in 2022, we also had another heat wave event in September, also spanning the Labor Day weekend, although a little bit longer than the one that occurred in 2020. So I'll be showing you charts that cover both August and September, so you can see how DCE's loads reacted to those heat wave events, as well as how your energy prices reacted. But before I jump into that, I just want to give a short summary and glad to go into more detail if you'd like on how DCE is positioned for this summer. And as the headline says, you know, I think our general characteristic is that you're well positioned for the summer. One is that we just have 3 years of data that lets us improve our forecasting of how DCE's load will respond to heat waves. Your load actually doesn't respond as dramatically as some of TEA's California clients. And that's because while it does get hotter in your community when heat is occurring throughout the state, you already have your AC on because it's already pretty hot. So it's not as dramatic, and therefore you aren't quite as exposed as some of our other clients when it comes to a dramatic step up in load over heat wave. Nonetheless, we still want to ensure that you're well hedged for the Q3 months. And that's why, you know, on an average basis, over July, August, and September, we have you hedged at 100 to 140%. And you might be saying that seems almost over-hedged. You know, the rationale behind this is twofold. One is that the hedging that we do for DCE tends to primarily be in block hedges, which means just peak hours or off-peak hours. And so that means while on average you are 120 to 140% hedged around the clock, in some hours you're less than that percent hedge, in some hours you're more than that. And so rather than trying to buy hedges that perfectly match your load, which are very expensive to buy on the market, we go for a more of a spread out approach that will, from a statistical risk perspective, reduce your risk of being exposed to high power prices at the least cost for DCE. And then one other thing to note about that hedging is that includes your three Palm Springs wind facilities that are in DCE's portfolio. Those wind facilities were actually very helpful in delivering power during the December-January price spike that occurred earlier this year. And, you know, we hope that they will also be helpful to DCE in your portfolio during any potential summer heat wave that we might have in 2023. Fingers crossed that it won't occur. I have heard from some meteorologists that we talked to about long wave range weather forecasts that it's difficult to have lots of heat when you've had as much water as we have had this year. So fingers crossed that that's the case. So jumping into, you know, the DCE load charts, this first one will be August, and then the next chart that I'll show you will be September. The blue line down at the bottom of the chart shows when the heat wave event occurred in 2020. As a reminder to the board, there was no heat wave event in 2021 or 2022 in August, just in 2020. And as you can look at the numbers, you know, that is pretty clearly showing up in the load data as well. The blue bar, which is the 2020 loads over each one of these days, is you know, higher than either the orange or the green bars, which represent 21 or 22 data. And you can also see that there is an increase in the loads overall between what was occurring on average in during the heat wave events, and then in the days that we included slightly before and after the heat wave events, you know, loads did creep up a little bit over that time period. However, as mentioned, they didn't creep up as dramatically as a lot of other California load serving entities saw. So an increase from, you know, an averaging around 80 megawatts an hour to, you know, getting over 100, 110, but nothing as severe as what was seen in the middle parts of the state or coastal California, which saw much increased loads. Moving on to the September data, this one's a little bit more interesting because we have two heat wave events that occurred in the data. In blue, again, you have the main heat wave event that occurred in 2020 over the Labor Day weekend, 5, 6, 7. The seventh was that Labor Day Monday. And then we had the main heat wave event that also occurred in September, again, over a week span, but including the Labor Day weekend. And so, you know, just as you would expect in the data, you see that the loads were elevated in 2022 and 2020 over loads in 2021, not dramatically so, but a big bump up. And so this is very helpful for TEA and DCE staff because it allows us to plan appropriately for how your loads might respond to future heat wave events, both for thinking about hedging strategies, as well as thinking about what sort of actions we can take in the short term as we you know, have a heat wave event enter the forecast? You know, do we want to put on a few extra hedges? Are there other activities we can do to help protect DCE financially, as well as, you know, allowing your staff to contact your community to ask them to conserve power? Two more charts for you. And this one gets into what DCE's net energy costs were, as well as CAISO prices. So first looking at August, and then the next slide will be on September. I'll push the button a moment and go through what net energy costs look like over these three years, as well as what prices did. And you know, the main takeaway here is just to watch how closely the net energy cost tracks to the prices. One thing to note is that the dotted lines, which are the costs, show up on the left axis, whereas the prices, which will be the solid lines, show up on the y-axis. So they do track very closely, but costs are your load multiplied times your prices, and accounting for a number of other variables, whereas prices are just, you know, prices themselves. So first we have here the net energy costs for 2020, 21, and 22. And you can see in the data, a real clear price spike, moving prices up pretty dramatically during that main heat wave event, particularly in the tail end of it in August. And that's right when the, you know, the rolling blackouts occurred, right at, you know, the peak that you see occurring here in 8/17 and 8/18. And these are around the clock prices. So on an hourly price, hourly basis, prices spiked up much more, but you know, they came down in the middle of the night and then spiked back up the next day over the entire heat wave period. And then when we look at DCE net, so the dashed lines are the net energy costs, and then these are the prices laid over on top of it. The main takeaway here is just how closely, but not perfectly, your net energy costs follow the prices. And this is, there's a number of different reasons why that is, but the main thing is that your hedges are controlling a large amount of your variability in prices, but there is still some exposure to the market. So there was still a few days back in there in 2020 when you had a much higher than average cost to serve your load. But you know, significantly better than it would have been if we hadn't had any energy hedges on at that time. So same story in September. I'm just going to click through to show you first net energy costs. Again, 2020 in blue, 2022 in green. Those were the two heat wave events. Red is 2021, and that's more of a normal day or normal period of time in September. And then the solid lines show your energy prices. So I think the main takeaways here, again, is that, you know, the prices went up as one would expect in a heat wave event, more dramatically in 2022 than in 2020. It was a much bigger heat wave that occurred in September in 2022. And your net energy costs increased as prices went up. You know, one thing I will say is that you might see that, you know, net energy costs went up a little bit higher. You know, ignoring the axis difference, you can see that the net energy costs were a little bit higher over the 2020 period versus the heat wave event that occurred in 2022 in comparison to prices, right? The that dashed blue line is above the solid blue line, whereas the dashed green line tracks very closely with the solid green line. The reason behind this was that the main heat wave event in 2020 occurred, it was about a 3-day event, and two of the 3 days were off-peak hours. One was a Sunday, and then one was Labor Day, which is a federal holiday. And you know, no one expected to have a heat wave event over Labor Day weekend. That was the first one I think the state had really ever seen. And you weren't as hedged. You weren't, you know, you were still over 100% hedged, but you weren't as overly hedged in off-peak hours as you were in on-peak hours. That was a lesson learned for everyone, including me, to ensure that you are well hedged in off peak hours. It's just Sunday most of the time in the middle of the night, but when you have a Labor Day weekend event, then you suddenly get 2 days in a row that are exposed to those off peak power prices, and you want to make sure that you're well hedged in those time periods as well.
Questions?
No questions. Thank you, Jacqueline. That was very helpful for me as far as the historical context. I appreciate it.
All right.
Jacqueline, thank you. I did not see those charts in the staff report. Would like a copy of the report, so that we can follow them. And with the greatest respect, there's way too much information on each one of those charts. If we're going to follow the information, it needs to be easier and cleaner to follow.
All right. Thank you for that feedback. Really appreciate it.
Okay.
Chair, we'll get you, Chair and Vice Chair, we'll get you a copy of the slides.
Okay. Thank you. And thank you again. I can know how hard it is to try to put this together. Next item, that was an information item. We will move on to items 8A through F. Are there any questions on any of those?
No.
Okay, no, I have none. So item 9 is public comments on non-agenda items. Are there any public comments on non-agenda items?
No, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Then lastly, announcement that there will not be a July meeting. Presently, the next scheduled meeting is August 21 at 3 p.m. That is subject to change and is likely to change if we do go ahead with a meeting on the 21st of August. And with that, it's adjournment time. And I want to thank everyone for the attention that goes into these meetings and this report. Thank you.